pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. It's Ambedkar Jayanti today, and our guest is special, the charming and articulate Shukla Bose, founder, CEO, Parikrama Humanity Foundation. Shukla is bridging the growing gap in urban India between those who benefit from the economic liberalization and those who don't through Parikrama Humanity Foundation, a non-government organization founded in 2003. Her professional work spans over 26 years in the hospitality sector and over 19 years in social reform, education advocacy, and the social sector. A TED speaker, she was also awarded the Pride of Karnataka Roundtable International in 2015. Shukla was with the Oberoi Hospitality Group for 13 years and was the CEO of RCI for 11 years. She volunteered with Mother Teresa for 7 years. Her experience with slum and street children greatly encouraged her to make the development of the underserved children her mission in life. Very rightly, she was recognized and honored with many awards. Amongst them, the Times Power Women Award in 2019. She was also recognized for her contribution to the education of the poor by the Save the Government Schools Initiative. She was awarded the International Excellence Award for Education Development from the Global Achievers Foundation, the Parivartan Inspire Awards for Women and Child Development, and the Work of Wonder by WOW Skin Science, celebrating those who work towards bringing a change in society in 2021. Listen in as Shukla shares her journey from little Shukla to the Shukla Ka, as she's fondly called by the children and the families that she continues to inspire. Hi Shukla, welcome to You and I with Rashmi Shetty. This has been a conversation that I wished for when I was on All India Radio, and it took 10 years to fructify into the conversation we are having today. Thank you so much for your time.
Most welcome. It's a delight to meet people that I had interacted with years ago who have still been in touch. So I applaud you for your consistency. And actually, what I really believe in is building relationships. And thank you for remembering me and getting in touch with me.
Thank you, Shukla. You write so powerfully. You speak so powerfully. I want to know what little Shukla was like to the Shukla Bose the world knows you today as.
Ah, that's a very long story because I'm 68 years old. So talking about how 68 years have passed is will take some time, but I'll make it brief. You know, my mother had many miscarriages before I was born. So she had, everybody around her had given up the hope that she could ever be a mother. And then she began to carry me. My family says that they thought that she would have a miscarriage again. But I am a survivor. I'm a fighter. I was determined to be born, and therefore I was born. And I was a 7-month premature baby. Those days there were no incubations. So I think I fought hard to live. And I think that's been the story of my life. I really fought for everything that I have got because I felt I deserved it. And nothing has come really easy to me, but I'm glad that it did not, because it gave me qualities of tremendous grit and resilience, which has paid off and helps me today. I try and transfer that to all the kids that I now teach, because I think grit is a very, very important quality that one must have. To go back to my childhood, my father was a very scrupulously honest government officer. Even those days, that was not very common. And the family had to pay the price for it, you know. There were many government vehicles parked outside our houses for my dad, but he would not allow us to use it. And I had to walk 6 kilometers to school every day because he felt the vehicles parked in our house were not meant for personal use. At that time, I really was annoyed with my dad because my dad's secretary's daughter would come in a vehicle and I would be trudging along with my brother. But today, I am really happy that I learned those first few lessons very early. Principles, working with a certain moral compass has really helped me in all these years, both in the corporate life as well as now running an NGO. I'm also happy that I was made to walk 6 kilometers, 12 kilometers, 6 kilometers one way, and because this is my childhood was in Darjeeling, and in Darjeeling there were no buses those days, so we had to walk, and I'm so happy I did, because I also played along with nature as I did, and that has also stood very well by me. My dad, because he was so scrupulously honest, did not have much money in hand. But I worked, I studied hard, got scholarships, and got admission into some of the real prime elite schools and colleges. The advantage of going to those colleges was it also opened up possibilities for me. And I had to stand my ground because all my classmates were richy rich. And I had to establish my identity. And I did that by studying well and having a point of view. But to keep myself grounded right from school and college, I volunteered with Mother Teresa at the Missionaries of Charity. And I think that has had an indelible impact on me, because when I decided to quit corporate life and get into this kind of social work, I was not scared. I knew what I was getting into, and I went into it with my eyes open.
Oh, I love that. And did you get to meet Mother Teresa? A question.
Yeah, I worked with her. Okay. I mean, remember, I'm talking about many years ago, before she got the Nobel Prize, before she became, she was already internationally famous because there were quite a few international volunteers then. Mm-hmm. But I was one of the thousands of volunteers. I was no one special, but I worked with her closely. Yeah, she has left great influence, and she has inspired me. So I remember many things that she told me. I wish those days I was not so young. Like today, if I had worked with Mother Teresa, I would have been far more watchful, far more observant, far more questioning, would have had a lot of conversations with her. Those days, as a student, as a young student, you want to get your work done, Right. So I would be more focused on getting the work done, not so much on reflective conversations with her. I wish I had. But even so, knowing the kind of person she was, she would find time to do one-to-one with me.
Okay. So which means from Darjeeling, you moved to Kolkata for your studies, and that's how you worked with Missionaries of Charity?
Yes, yes. After I finished school, I did my college in Kolkata, did my master's in Kolkata, did my MBA there. So, yeah.
Okay, so Missionaries of Charity was something that you did as social service. And what was your stream of study that you pursued further as far as your career was concerned?
I did, I studied English, literature was my subject. I did my master's in comparative literature. Then I did my business management, focusing on marketing. And while I was at work, I did a course on social entrepreneurship from Washington University. Yeah, so it's basically been more on business, languages, business, and not so much on sustainability, not so much. So that was a learning that was kind of homegrown that I learned along the way.
So when it came to these streams of studies, was it something that interested you, intrigued you from literature to move to comparative literature and then business as in marketing? Was this something which was a very conscious move each time that you took every course of study that you did?
Yeah, it was interest driven. It was interest driven, yeah. And that is quite unusual, actually, those days. Because you sort of, look, I was a good student, and therefore it was expected of me to be doing sciences. Yes. My parents wanted me to be a doctor. You know, the typical middle-class family expectations, aspirations for their child. So, yeah, but I held my ground, and I did humanities. And I have to say, I have to give a lot of credit to my parents for conceding to my wishes, because many parents don't do that. But yeah, I said, no, I enjoy sciences, but I enjoy humanities more. I like English more. I like poetry more. I like history more. So that's why I really had to put my foot down and say, this is what I want. Then I, doing comparative literature, yes, after having studied English literature, I said, you know, I want to expand my base of learning. And those days, comparative literature was a new genre of education. But it excited me, and it was possible to get in also. That is also important to be able to get in the admissions in Jadavpur University. Because comparative literature was something new, they were not really very cagey about admissions. So I'm glad that I did that. I met such fantastic professors, had such intellectual debates and discussions. I think those really helped me to establish my opinion and be able to express them.
Okay. And it was your time with Missionaries of Charity and Mother Teresa that actually moved you into social entrepreneurship as a professor?
When I was volunteering with Mother Teresa, I would volunteer on the weekends. I never ever thought that that was going to be my career. I mean, I never ever looked at that as my career. I really felt good serving. I needed to get back because, as I said, I went to some of the elite schools and colleges, which my father could not have otherwise afforded. I was fortunate to have been offered scholarships. While I enjoyed all the facilities and the opportunities and opening up of new ideas, I also needed to feel grounded. And that is the reason why I would offer my time to Mother Teresa. And when I began to go there, enjoy working with her, I wanted to do more of it. And that's how it happened. But it still never was going to be a career. You know, at that time, I never ever thought. I thought, and I still think, that everybody must serve. Okay, so that was my service.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then you moved into a corporate career. What happened through the course of it? What shifted through the course of it that you decided to move out of?
It was expected of me to put all my learnings into, getting into business. I joined the hospitality industry because I've always liked working with people rather than numbers. So working in the hospitality sector, working in hotels, gave me that opportunity to interact with people. I enjoyed it. I slowly went up the rung and did well. I've been in the corporate world for 26 years. 11 of those years was as a CEO of a very large multinational company. I was looking after India, Southeast Asia, Middle East, then eventually China before I left. But always, always, I was very, very conscious of the big gap that existed. You know, I was always very conscious. I was in luxury, you know, brands. I would deal with opinion leaders and a little bit of glamour and all that stuff. But I was always conscious that that was not the whole world. We would talk and sit and discuss, you know, crunch data, economic data and sociological thing. But one day I said, you know, enough is enough. You know, I was one of those very few professional women CEOs at that time. There were only three professional CEOs. There were, of course, many women managing their family company. But as a professional CEO, there weren't many. And I was one of those few that, of course, had challenges, but it also opened up many doors. Again, so I would be talking about, you know, the state of the country and that kind of stuff. But I said, oh, how long can I go on talking about it over a cup of coffee and deliberating and, you know, making judgment about, you know, way things were? Why don't I dirty my own hands myself and actually see what I can do? Right through my professional career, I continued to be connected with the missionaries of charity. I would obviously, you know, sponsor children, support them and all. But that was not enough, you know. I felt I needed to do something more. So I said, this was in 1999, okay? Everybody was talking about the new millennium, you know, 2000 and all that stuff, and how they would celebrate New Year's Eve in one country and another country and another country and a continuous phase, you know, because of the difference of time and all. I would listen to it. It was interesting, but it wasn't exciting. I said, this new millennium, I'm going to change myself inside out. You know, all of us have learned to respond to change, but very few invite change and embrace change. I wanted to do that. I said, you know, turning myself inside out is what I want to do. Do things that I've never done before. And that didn't include bungee jumping or anything that seems to be very fashionable. For me, it was like I would do something so very different that would impact other lives.
So were you clear at that point that you're going to work with little children, or all of that evolved when you decided you're going to move out of the corporate? And at that point, you decided to turn it inside out. You're going to step out of the corporate world and literally get your hands dirty. But where? How did you decide where you were?
Well, you know, I've always, when I would think about it on my own, I've always known that working with children and working with women are the two areas that can actually have long-lasting impact. I was aware of that. And I was comfortable working with children as well as with women. But one of the things that I became aware of is that with children, you can work faster. You can see changes faster. Transformation is easier. With women, of course, it is very, very meaningful, valuable, but it takes a longer time to change mindsets. So education was the area I wanted to be in because education has helped me so much. And I know what education can do to change the quality of life of people and their families. So education is an area I always knew I wanted to be. I was very clear about it. But was it going to be education for children or education for women? I actually chose the software option. I love children. And therefore, I knew that I was going to get far more joy working with children. But one of the things that I have done, Rashmi, which sets us apart from many other NGOs or education NGOs in education, is we work with the families very closely. We work with the mothers. So we... I am actually into education of women in an informal way.
I am now very curious, Shukla, on the name, because parikrama means the path that is surrounding something which you take as a part of your service of prayer. Now, how did you come up with the name of your foundation as Parikrama?
It was no rocket science, actually. I was thinking of names that appealed to me, names that had a nice ring to it. The phonetics were important for me. It worked out pretty well because, you know, Pari means a circle, Krama means complete. Completing the circle of life of children. And we spell Parikrama a little differently. We have missed out one A. That is because actually in true Sanskrit version, Parikrama is spelled the way we spell it. You know, P-A-R-I-K-R-M-A. Yeah.
Okay, so circle of life. Wow. This is a nice, I always was curious when I read about Parikrama Foundation. The very first time I heard it also, that for me, Parikrama would mean in a temple in the Himalayas, when people go there, that's what they do. They call, that's a huge part of the Himalayan journey, the Parikrama.
Yeah. So for us, it has no religious significance. It is, Parikrama is a journey, a pilgrimage. For us, it is the journey of transformation, transforming. And the circle of life is because we address one of our model, the Parikrama model, is 360 degree, where we give them food, we give them healthcare, we work with their families, and we give them great education. So that is the circle of life that we talk about.
Beautiful. So the first Parikrama center that you established was in Bangalore in 2000, or how did the whole thing evolve?
Okay. No, we started Parikrama in 2003. And the first school was in the Koramangala slums. In 2002, 2003, there were about 850 slums in Bangalore. I walked through about 333 slums. With my colleagues who were then there with me, and they continue to be with me today. So we were very clear that we wanted to be very close to the slums. We call our schools, not schools actually, we call them centers for learning, you know, Parikrama centers for learning. That is because we want it to be a center for learning even for the parents. As I said, we work closely with the parents. So we knew that while we could provide transport and all for children to come to our school, the closer the school was to their home, the more successful the school would be. You know, in fact, I would dream of a pristine white building inside the slums, which would be both inspirational as well as aspirational. But over a period of time, I realized that you can't have a school inside the slums and stay away from all the dynamics of the slums. You want to change that, and therefore you have to be a little away from the slums. So we are not absolutely inside the slums, we are in the periphery of the slums. So it's like the children cross the sewage drain to come across to our school. And in the school, it's a totally different environment, you know.
And when you started this, how difficult was it? You said you walked through 300 slums. So how difficult was it for you to get them to understand the value of studies? Was it easy? Were they just reading for somebody to set it up? What were your initial challenges, Shukla? Because once you're established, it's easy for people to see transformation.
So there were many challenges. First, there was a lot of skepticism.
Yes.
Skepticism from both ends. Skepticism from my past life because they thought, oh, I was taking a break and, you know, sabbatical. I was going to come back. And the other skepticism we faced was from the community that we wanted to serve, because they had been exploited in the past. Okay, the unexploitation still continues. What kind of exploitation? They were really worried whether we would take away their children and sell their organs, as horrific as that. Because there were such cases. There have been some such cases where people have gone promising, you know, we'll keep your children in our hostel and send them to school and all that. And later on, they've come back home with scars in their body. You know, a kidney has been taken or something. I mean, so those scarred families were very, very suspicious. But I think over a period of time, they realized that we were very sincere. They realized that, you know, we had no vested interest in this at all. They realized that I could have lived very, very comfortably, you know, flown first class, driven a Mercedes that I did, and not have had to do this, but I chose to do this. I think eventually that genuineness came through and the that connected. It was difficult to convince them, and we had to sort of say, which schools are your children going to? Are they going to schools? And, you know, so do a recce, and we would not take in kids, boys, into our school if their sisters were left behind. So we said, no, no, no. There were many boys that we did not admit, because their girls in the family were not being sent to school.
So as you were on this journey, do you remember the first few kids and any story with those kids that continue to bring a smile on your face and inspire you to just move forward?
Oh, yeah, of course. Not just a few, many. At least about 100 of them the first year. Okay. You know, they're still in touch with us. In fact, 21 of my students who graduated from Parikrama, went for higher studies, took up professional courses, worked for a couple of years, are now back in Parikrama as teachers. 21 of them. Okay. So, we are very connected. In fact, some of my early year students, I think 2010, when the first batch passed out of grade 12, those students are now IT professionals, lawyers, studying chartered accountancy, working very well, paramedical courses and all. They have formed a Parikrama Alumni Association and are all geared up to help Parikrama and to their giving back to Parikrama. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. For you, Shukla, when you set out on this journey, when you decided the overall change in 2000 to 2023, 23 years has been quite a journey. You know, maybe when you were in the grind of it, you never realized, but now in those pause moments when you sit back and look at all the moments of the journey, what were some of the initial highs that you had, which kept you going through it?
Okay, I remember our first annual day meet where we had invited all the parents. I think we were celebrating it in Ambedkar Bhavan, you know, and so children performing and all. One mother walked up to the stage and said she wanted to say something. And she said, she prays to God every day and thanks him for having found Parikrama for her child. She says, I know that I work as a maid in people's houses, and my husband is an alcoholic and has abandoned me. I'm a single parent. I have two kids. I know that Parikrama will give them all the love that maybe I couldn't give, because they are such a loving organization. And I know that I can leave the decision of what my children have to do entirely to Shuklaka, because I know she will take a call on their future, looking at them as her own child. But most importantly, I love being with Parikrama because I have never been given so much of dignity in my life before. You know, I'm just a maid, but they don't treat me like a maid. They treat me like a parent. So the kind of graciousness that they extend to me is something that I'll never forget. And I think that happened on the first annual day, and it touched me a great deal. You know,
that's such a special moment. And were there moments when you stopped and questioned yourself if this quest is worth it?
Oh, there have been great amounts of challenges, disappointment, you know, really highs and lows. There have been times when say, for instance, a donor who promised us a great deal of money, on which basis we agreed to open another school. Now we have four schools. Decided to back out the last minute because we did not want the girls and the boys to be kept separate, you know, in a class. You know, girls have to sit one side, boys have to sit one side. And I said, look, we think they're all equal, they're all children, they're all... when it is time, when they become conscious of themselves, we will take calls. But I don't want anyone to tell me what to do, you know? And these are our ideas, our ideologies. And then I cannot give break times for certain prayer meetings, or I can't, you know... We celebrate all religions. For me to have my organization running as a totally secular organization has been tough. But we continue to do that because we believe that's who we are. You know, children are children. We don't ever look at their background. In fact, it's their background that makes them eligible for us, right? So, so when this company backed out of giving us this large grant, I felt, my God, how are we going to do it? How are we going to manage it? We've admitted kids for this particular school on the basis of the commitment that had been given to us. What will we do? I mean, then I thought and I said, it's because of those kids that we have admitted that we have to carry on. Yeah. Because they're waiting to get good education. Yeah, there have been lots of lows as well. Okay. But I think as soon as I go and see my kids' faces, no, I tell everyone, people say, how do you have the energy at your age after all these years? And I say, you know, I look at my kids and they are my vitamin pills. You know, I sort of get all the energy from them.
Yeah, correct. Very true. And it's 20 years now, Shukla, and 2 decades is a long time. Now, when you're looking back at the journey and you see what kept you going, what pulled you down, but still you found that optimism to carry on, how do you see little Shukla who walked that 6 kilometers every day to school, connecting to nature, to this Shukla, who is now connected to the best creations of nature, little kids? And how have you seen her evolution?
That little Shukla had no idea what the world was like or what she was going to get into. Had no idea. But I think because that Shukla was connected to a family, parents that really believed in simplicity, sincerity, sensitivity, believed in perseverance. I think that's what gave me the strength to, you know, do the kind of work that I do today. Is there a connection between that Shikla and the Shikla? I think there are certain values that are eternal. Values of integrity, values of honesty, values of being genuine, not saying anything that you don't mean. And then in my professional life, learning how to stand on one's own in a very, very male-dominated world through your professionalism and through your product knowledge. Those are things that have actually shaped me and, you know, helped me to shape my organization, Parikrama.
And for a lot of people, social entrepreneurship is the in thing. A lot of youngsters try and want to do it, get into it. But in this age of instant gratification, everything happening just like that in a jiffy, what would you like to tell them to hold themselves together? Because as much as the enthusiasm gets them together, the inability to move forward just breaks them up. So what would you like to tell them as somebody who's been through the grind so many years as to what are
the qualities? I have to make one thing very clear. I never began Parikrama as an entrepreneur. I began Parikrama as a social worker, as wanting to serve. Social entrepreneurship is where you find a little business angle that can make you sustainable, helps you to do good business that does good. I have never looked at Parikrama as a business. It is just a platform to bring people together who think, who are like-minded, who are wanting to give back to these children, to these society, to society. So, but I actually have been speaking to social entrepreneurs, and I really believe that the intent of or doing business that will also do good, but also keep them running and sustainable is very good. And I would like to encourage them. So advice to them is to be very patient. This kind of work you're dealing, like what I do, is like, it's not just education. It's not just giving them a certificate. It's not just equipping them for a job. It's to change their mindsets. They need to think differently. They don't need a child from the slums or with the kind of exposure and opportunity we give them, does not need to think like someone from the slums. You know, they need to think big. They need to see the world. They need to, and these might sound like cliches, but it is the real stuff that we do. I mean, we are sending 5 kids in the month of June to San Diego to compete in a global youth leadership summit. 5 kids from the slums are going there. And I can assure you that no one will ever be able to distinguish them as being different from any other kids from any other country. Okay. So now it's why this happening is because they think differently. They think they can do it. So I think social entrepreneurship deals with also changing beliefs, changing mindsets, changing approach and attitude. That takes time. It's intergenerational change. So it takes time. They have to be patient. They mustn't think too big. What I mean by that, I might sound contradictory. What I mean by that is that, you know, there's ambition, you know, of scaling, of, you know, this kind of ROI, this kind of revenue. Even small businesses do well and they have great impact. So we say that, you know, I don't want to start schools for 2-3 million children. I know that the real content of Parikrama will get diluted in the process. You know, that one-to-one loving care that we have for our children. We have 2,000 children that we are working with. That's a large number. If these 2,000 children will change a family's members of at least 25,000-30,000 people. Okay. I look at that as scaling. I don't look at, you know, shops all over, you know, selling organic tea. I'm don't look at that way. So I my recommendation to social entrepreneurs is have a real sound plan. This is the advice that Mother Teresa had given me, where you know you have to really have great clarity. You really need to know what you want to do, okay? And irrespective of what comes your way, you have to hold on to it, okay? Change it a bit to suit market needs and all, but really have clarity about what you want to do and great amount of conviction, okay? Passion, patience, and perseverance. These are some of the things that I think all social entrepreneurs need to have.
Passions, patience, and perseverance, and a lot of clarity. Now, when you look back, yes, these were all what drove you. But there are moments when some kind of recognition that came your way must have made you or given you that trampoline push to say that, yes, this is really telling me that I'm on my path. What are some of those moments, Shukla? Because you are today quite decorated. So do you have certain moments that will be priceless for you?
Yeah. Okay. You know, I have had a lot of personal awards, best social activist, Bangalore hero, and all those kind of awards. Really, while I'm grateful to those who have recognized me, they don't have any impact on me. But when Parikrama is chosen as the number one social impact NGO in the country, that gives me a great high. The reason for that, it's not recognizing one individual. It's recognizing all of us, 200 of us that are working with 2,000 children. It's recognizing the security guy. It's recognizing, you know, the lady who's helping us to wash the dishes, because we're all doing it with great amount of love and care. For some, it is a job for sure. We need jobs. But for many, it is their passion. And I feel very good, yeah, when, you know, Parikrama is recognized, like the fact that five of our kids got selected to go and represent the country to San Diego is a big high. It inspires all the junior kids.
Yeah.
So they say, oh, this, she could go, I can also aspire to go. You know, that really brings in inspiration in the organization.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. In fact, just visualizing the dreams now in the eyes and minds of the younger kids who are watching their seniors being selected is such a wonderful visual to have. Like, imagine if all of them want something like that and push them to find it.
Like, say, for instance, I mean, this Karnataka won the Santosh Trophy after 54 years. I'm so proud that we have students playing there. We have a student playing there, and the coach of the Karnataka team is my colleague, Ravi Babu, is the head of sports in Parikrama.
Oh, okay.
You know, so there are lots of these kind of accolades that come to us, you know. We send our children to participate in inter-school competition at really high-end schools, and they always win prizes. Not necessarily the best prize, but definitely the second or the third prize. So prizes are not important, but that recognition that these kids have got on a platform, on a stage where they could never have dreamt of earlier, is what drives us.
Yeah. And that is the power of dreams. The ability to dream. And I think when you decide to just go beyond your comfort zone, and like you said, change completely, outward in and inward out, life changes, not only for you, but for people around you. And you seem to be in that nice reflective space. So when it comes to the pandemic, which pushed all of us into reflection, made us sit back, pause, and think what life is doing, how did Shukla Bose and Parikrama look at the back?
You know, to be very honest, we didn't have time to pause. We were frenetic energy trying to do something. Yeah, we distributed provisions in all the slums that we are working with, because many of our mothers and fathers had lost their jobs. We served about nearly a lakh meals those few days. Then we raised money to buy vaccines from private organizations and actually vaccinated about 2,500, 3,000 people in the slums, because they are always lowest in the rung, right? Mm-hmm. Even in the primary health centers, it was many upper middle class people who are going and getting the vaccination. These people would have to give their daily wage and stand in a line and to be told, oh, we've run out of vaccines. I didn't want that to happen. So to protect my children, to protect their families, we actually bought vaccines, expensive vaccines, and vaccinated all of them. So we protected them. Then we couldn't be sitting back and not having schools. So we raised funds to give devices to all our children, and about 1,800 devices. And we ran online classes. But before that, I had to teach my teachers how to run online classes. So we were really busy. There was very little time for reflection.
Okay. I've had 103 conversations. Nobody said this in the 103 conversations. So hats off, Shukla. When it comes to life lessons, because you've seen so much in all these years. So I know three would be asking for too little. But then if there are three of the life lessons that you'd like to leave us with, what would be those three major ones that you think all of us should somewhere inculcate in our life?
One of the most important life lessons that I've applied to myself is don't quit. You cannot quit. You have to carry on. Secondly, one of the things that I have learned is, you know, I'm just an instrument. I'm nobody. I'm just an instrument. I'm just very grateful and fortunate that I've got this opportunity. So to serve, to actually change people's lives. My life lesson is don't take yourself too seriously. You're no big deal. You know, you may be getting awards, you may be getting, people may be saying all this, and all. Just stay away from it. You are here to serve, and you have to do it in the best way you can. Okay, so the third thing is each one of us can serve, each one of us. A lot of people, you know, think, oh, I will have to get older, I have to pay off my loans, I will have to, you know, build a house, then only can I, you know, start thinking of doing social work. I always tell people, the time is now, right now. Don't wait for better things. Don't wait for a better opportunity, because do whatever you can do now. In my school, we had a program where we asked children to bring just one fistful of rice, okay? Just one fistful of rice and give it. So in a school of 330 kids, there were 330 fistful of rice. Over a period of time, we could really contribute that rice to people who didn't even have that. So I tell my children, be grateful for what you have. You are far better off than many others, you know. So I think those are some of the lessons I have learned along the way. Is not to take yourself too seriously. You're just an instrument. You are here to serve. Secondly is, when you've taken on a journey, never quit. Because people are there looking up to you. You can't be selfish. You know, you have a sense of responsibility. And the third is, do whatever you can. I mean, you know, take care of the education of your mate's child. Okay, one child. Take care of one tree across the road that is at risk. Take care of it. Water it. Make sure that nobody cuts its branches. Make sure that there are no cementing around. And take care of one street dog by just feeding it. I'm not telling everybody. I have five rescues, okay, in my house. But everybody doesn't need to bring the dogs in. But they can take care of them. You know, vaccinate them, feed them, make sure that they are spayed or neutered so they're not little puppies all over. No point in complaining about it. We got to do something about it and do whatever you can.
That's so true, Shukla. You live what Mahatma Gandhi had said, be the change that you want to see around you. And just starting with the individual action can just spread that ripple effect, and you never know who would get the benefit of it. Thank you so very much. 10 years, long time, but definitely worth every second. Thank you so much for this conversation. Honored to have had you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. The uniqueness and individuality that you carry, Shukla, I only hope just continues to spread as the beacon of light for anyone who wants to make a difference.
Thank you, Rashmi. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity.
Thanks a lot. Thank you. God bless you. Continue inspiring.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.